Welcome to Responsa Radio, where you ask and we answer questions of Jewish law in modern times. We are recording live at Limud, New York. So this next question, I think, is a perfect Limud, New York question, because if this question was ever relevant, I think it's relevant at a conference like this. And it's a long question, but I think the questioner does such a good job describing it that I'll let him do it.
Great.
How should I deal with paper that has God's name on it, or words of Torah more generally? Given that institutions of Torah produce boxes and boxes of shemot, which is this word for papers with God's name on it, of shemot trash, things like leftover source sheets, worn-out books, worksheets, etc., do they all need to be buried away in a geniza? I understand the function of Geniza back in the day when there was less printing and certainly less wasteful use of paper. And I understand the goal of imbuing God's name with sanctity by not throwing it into the garbage. But I feel like our relationship to the printed word is really different now. And we have an easier time imagining content and ideas as separate from the medium through which we experience them. Additionally, there may be environmental benefits to recycling paper instead of letting it be carted away for some nebulous burial procedure. Parentheses, what actually happens to Geniza items anyway? And they conclude with, I think, a really interesting and helpful test case. He says, my test case is a sheet I printed out that is a first draft of a Dvar Torah I wrote, where I copied and pasted full verses from an online website, and I neglected to change the name of God. The draft is now obsolete, and I want to dispose of it. My gut feeling is that this is so different from a sefer that it shouldn't need Geniza. So I notice right next to the help desk around the corner from us, there's a box that's labeled Geniza, and it says, unwanted handouts with God's name can go here. So
yeah, well, the answer to this better be that there's some flexibility around this. Otherwise, we're all going to hell, because we are in an environment now where, as the questioner says, we are printing and duplicating so much. This is a great example of Sheilat Chacham Chatzi Tshuva, right? A wisely formulated question already contains half the answer in it. And maybe I'll just sort of draw out, I think, part of what this questioner is saying. First of all, let's keep in mind there's two different kinds of sacred material. There is stuff that actually has the name of God on it. And in particular, the way that gets traditionally understood are seven names of God. Things like Elohim, Yud-Heh, Vav-Heh, Shaddai.
Any of the seven names.
Any of the seven names. There's always a kind of particular freak out about Yud-Heh, Vav-Heh. Mm-hmm. But formally, if you look in like the Rambam and Maimonides, you'll see there's seven names of God that are really understood to be sacred, and you can't erase any of those. And then there's kind of holy material more generally. Copies of a page of Talmud. Forget copies, right? Someone writing out the text of a Talmud for study, but it doesn't have God's name in it, let's say. But it's not just the newspaper, which is going to end up as, at the bottom of the birdcage. And those are two levels, and they have to be kept distinct because most understand that there's a biblical prohibition to destroy God's name, but only a rabbinic level prohibition to at least directly destroy those kinds of other writings. So that's one category we have to break down. The second is there's different ways of interacting with this material, right? One is erasure. Right, the core biblical prohibition is actually on not wiping out God's name. So think about a Sefer Torah, where you have like Yud-Heh, Vav-Heh. If you just came along with an eraser and scraped off that ink, that's the core thing that I think actually most of us, in our age of Xeroxing, that would be the thing that you would like totally freak out, right, if you saw someone do that. That's the highest level. But then there's a whole other level of a kind of indignity that you treat objects with. You're not allowed to throw things in the garbage. Right? Now, you throw something in the garbage, you're not actually scraping out the name of God, but there's something of, what is that thing doing in the garbage? All right? And so imagine a Sefer Torah being thrown in the garbage. Right? That would, I think, totally freak us out, though it wouldn't freak you out at the same level as someone actually scraping off the name of God and destroy it. Or at least I would say the tradition normatively suggests that we should have a hierarchy between those two. So that's another axis. Like, how are we treating
it? It feels like a difference between intentionally destroying something and then being careless with it.
Yeah, and leading to its destruction in some way. I think that's right. And then what the questioner is also getting to is the axis of, the sanctity of the object we're talking about here. So a Sefer Torah, again, is at the top of this pyramid. It is a text that was written out by hand with intention to be used for sacred study. That's clearly the highest and most paradigmatic level. Then you have, later on, early modern printing. Early modern printing is essentially, you know, you line up all kinds of pieces of iron that have been forged in the shape of letters, and then with a press, you actually pull it down, and you print all of those letters at once with the ink, and pressing the ink onto the paper. And that is a step removed, because there's a certain, like, mechanical element where you're just almost making an image, but you're still very physically involved in actually putting the ink on the paper. That was phase one of the halachic debate. Does that move us to a new category? There were people who suggested maybe it does, but for the most part, that was resisted. No, printing should be treated exactly the same. All the restrictions, for instance, about a husband and his wife, a married couple, being intimate in the presence of a Sefer Torah, which is forbidden. With the early printing press, the question was, well, is that appropriate in the context of a printed book? And for the most part, there's a towing of the line on that. Then you get to what I'll call not early modern printing and what we're familiar with. And there's some notion almost of like, I set up some process and I push a button and then it like spits out a book. Right?
Especially when you can accidentally print 20 copies of something that you intended to print one of.
Great. And
I'm
then
sure has happened to everybody.
And what you're really taking it to is then Xeroxing, which is one step even beyond that, where it's not even being bound. It's not even given some final form. It's almost just like, hey, get me a few of those. And as you say, you may not even realize how many you're making. You can walk away from the machine and suddenly it's making 100 more than you intended. And the language to capture that's what some poskim try to investigate when dealing with this thorny topic. Maybe that could be considered. The Chazon Ish of Yeshaya Karlitz, one of the great Haredi poskim in the 20th century, he wouldn't like quite go there all the way, but he suggested that perhaps modern kind of mimeographing and Xeroxing should be understood as masekof be'alma. It's like a monkey printing something. Now, there's like no human agency anymore, that it doesn't make sense to talk about it that way. So those, I think, are the questions that, like, if you were to give, like, the detailed psak on this, you'd have to break down. And the lower down you get on each of those lists, the more room for some kind of flexibility. In this case, I think what some contemporary rabbis have tried to do, and I think we're still at the beginning of this question, is try to figure out how they can make the case for being as low on each of those three lists. That is to say, the level of the material that we're talking about, is it actually God's name or other stuff? What we're doing to it, is it direct erasure and destruction, or is it putting it in a place that maybe eventually something happens? And then the third, what's the actual medium that it's on?
So in the second category, you didn't specifically bring up recycling. It psychologically feels very different to me if I was to say, I'm putting my Devar Torah copy in the trash, which is like gross, and I wouldn't want to pick it up because then I just, you know, dumped my leftover food on top of it, versus I put it in a recycling bin. It feels less disrespectful to me, but I'm curious if...
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. When I was struggling with this question, and this is an example of a question where, first of all, it drives me crazy. I mean, I help run an institution that produces this kind of stuff all the time, and I have felt since day one completely stymied about what's the exact right response, because you simply cannot bury everything that is printed of that sort. Even the act of sitting there and sorting through everything that's ever been Xeroxed to see if God's name is on it is extremely difficult and cumbersome and sort of mind-numbing. A few students in the yeshiva the other day were sitting for like an hour sorting through the Geniza. I was watching it. I was thinking about this question. I was like, I wasn't going to stop them. A part of me was like, you should be learning Talmud, not doing this. There's something about it that's just not manageable.
You know they're going to listen to the podcast.
Yeah, I know. Oh, God. All right. Well, maybe we'll embargo that piece of it. What I'll say is this. I think, I like your formulation because I think we actually need to find a way to have some kind of conceptual breakthrough on this. My initial line of thought was maybe the right way to think about this is in comparison to the concept of nivul hamet, the desecration or indignity dealt to a dead body, to a dead human body. And it's actually a very apt comparison because you know what you're actually supposed to do with a worn-out Sefer Torah is you bury it with a tzaddik,
right? You bury it. It's actually an incredibly powerful practice. Take the Sefer Torah and it is buried with a righteous person.
And that's something that people do with books also, right?
That's right, with books as well. So that's great when that works out. But I wonder if there's something we can learn in the other direction. There's some amazing tshuvot about organ transplantation, which Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, among others, has a beautiful tshuva about a cornea transplant. And he's dealing with the question of, could it possibly, how can we get around the fact that this is sort of desecrating the body of the dead person to help someone who's living? And cuts the Gordian knot on this, and he says, what are you, crazy? That's triyat ha-metim. You are taking a cornea that would just sit dead in the ground. You are giving it life. What possible greater dignity for a dead part of the body could there be than to restore its life? And that's where
this
the recycling...
This is a very powerful image for recycling.
Right, I know, maybe a little too heavy. But it does get to something. I think it's exactly what you said. Could we develop language where we say, or let me put it this way, if I were completely in control of everything, my preferred solution would be, there's a separate bin for recycling for this kind of material. That's not just for like the agenda from the staff meeting. And that goes to a plant that then processes it into paper, which is sold as what you copy your new source sheets onto, right? And it's actually marked as being that. Now, here I'll tell you the other thing, which like, great, so that's fantastic.
I can just imagine in my head all of the Mishnayot that would develop around what you can and can't do with that paper.
Exactly. What if I have left over from that ream?
Exactly.
Can I use it for something else? This actually brought me to confront something which I think is really also intense and we have to recognize. And it actually goes to questions of, with a lot of questions I think we get, how in control of your situation are you? So, right, in a world in which I could control the recycling plants, the distribution, the labeling, the sales, etc., that seems to me the obvious right way to address this issue, quite frankly, even with things that have the actual name of God on them. You are bringing them back to life in a next form while they were endure as conveyors of Torah to people. And it's interesting, when you look at Israeli rabbis who have been struggling with this question, they have a lot more control. And so they will, I found one, I'm not remembering the name of the rabbi, and I think maybe Rabbi Yeshaya Diskin, but I may be remembering his name wrong, who says, great, because of all these factors, here's what we need to do. We need to put a supervising rabbi at the recycling plant, and he'll make sure that the way it's recycled is in a way that's indirect and not destroying everything, et cetera, et cetera. And then we'll have like a network of people in the yeshivot that like maybe will, you know, be able to get this material back or... all sorts of stipulations which presume and appropriately respond to having more responsibility and control. And I'm reading this and thinking, but this is completely impossible in the diaspora. And what you then find, what I uncovered is, I think it was the Chavot Yair, though I may be misremembering because he says this in the context of Shabbat. No, what you should do in a case of various kinds of printings that you can't bury, but there's no way to, you can't just throw them in the garbage, is what you should do is tell one Gentile to tell another Gentile to put them in a place where they will passively kind of decay and remove yourself from the equation. It's what's called amira la amira. And in a way, at first, that sounds like a total hedge, but in a way, there's actually a deep insight there, which is saying, I have a responsibility to police that which I have some degree of control of. Jews cannot throw sacred things in the garbage. Maybe they can recycle them without, you know, that much of a problem, but they cannot, they can't certainly take things with God's name and just, you know, not deal with them in an intense and appropriate way. But it may also be unrealistic for Jews to control the entire line of paper production and processing all the way through. And there may be actually an appropriate kind of tzniut of backing off of saying, look, in my geniza, in my place, I'm going to treat this with respect and I'm going to never throw it out. I'm only going to recycle it. At the point where the recycling is not going to end up for sacred purposes, which is what I would do, it's already enough steps removed that it's not my responsibility.
Yeah, it's a really interesting frame that I think takes apart in a way that I would have never thought the question of, is this mitzvah about my behavior towards these papers, or is it about what actually happens to the papers? Such that I could imagine saying, well, if I throw everything together and you do the sorting, some rabbi at the plant does the sorting, do I really get credit for having given kavod to these papers in any kind of special way? Whereas maybe if I did the sorting myself, but the paper eventually gets recycled in some, you know, inappropriate way, then maybe that's what mattered. And it feels like two very different angles of as to what is this actually about.
Yeah, that's a really helpful frame. That's great.
Can you erase the name of God from electronic devices?
So erasing God's name electronically, right, that on some level you're really adding the next level of writing, right? Which is to say, is it potentially completely ephemeral, right? Like it doesn't even exist at all, or it exists in some kind of digital form, but where the actual, wherever it's written, you are not really seeing it when it's erased, or what the question is even of erasing it. So I will say, to me, one of the places I think you have to start with this question, there is, in the context of the laws of Shabbat, a position of the Bach, Rav Yoel Sirkis, who says that, this is in 16th, 17th century Poland, you know, you have to understand, everyone agrees that if you, like, have a piece of paper, or you have a box that contains a word that's written in it, and you open and close the box on Shabbat, that's not writing, right? In other words, you sort of like you have to remember that for all the things we're talking about, temporary writing or this or that, or for instance, you know, the Shulchan Aruch forbids writing on a window pane when it's fogged up on Shabbat. It's not a full act of writing, that's a violation of Shabbat, but it's the act of writing, it's asur mi derabbanan, it's rabbinically forbidden. But says the Bach, but something where you are really just kind of revealing something on Shabbat.
Would that be different than opening and closing a book?
That's right. It's not really different than opening and closing a book. And he wants to give you that sense of, like, I think he's trying to just give you a sort of absurd endpoint where everyone would agree this is not the case. But I think it's actually a useful limit case for thinking about when something we may talk about as writing or erasing has ceased to even be writing or erasing. So, for instance, you think about an image on a screen where maybe you have, like, yud hey vav hey on the screen and, like, highlighting it and then deleting it. Someone could go into the technical specifications of what's actually happening on the drive in that moment, but that feels much more like a bunch of stuff that is being revealed, concealed, etc. And certainly in the notion of erasing, I think we have to remember this, right? The act of erasing is actually understood to be the act of wiping out something that was written in ink. The question of whether, so that's one angle on this, I would say, that I think in general a lot of electronic stuff is not permanent enough in that way to fall exactly in the same category. Now that said, I think there's another dimension here, which is, you know, what would it mean, do we have to worry about formatting a hard disk, which we know has some data that encrypts God's name? Well, at that point, I think the real answer is, but God's name is not actually on that disk. There is some kind of configuration of ones and zeros which is projecting out onto an image of God's name on the screen, but which has no actual physical reality of the name. And I think all of the issues here around the actual names of God that can't be erased actually have some sort of visual experiential effect of, this is written in this form, and I am now erasing it. I will tell you that there are some times when I have been typing, and there is some context of yud hey vav hey, I will instinctively put the cursor in the middle of the letters, type in another letter, and then erase it. Because there's something emotionally difficult about, at least when I'm focusing just on that one thing, of actually taking the name of God and making it disappear. But I don't really think about it at all, and I don't think I would want to work out the answer much more. When you talk about just hitting, like, Control A, select all, and deleting an entire thing, or maybe there's some name of God that's buried in there, but that's not what you're experiencing doing. There, the notion of what even it means to be written, I think, is very much in play. But there's some deeper discussions that have come up in that.
There's something kind of ironic about this question as a follow-up, because that's almost the exact act that you have to do in order to avoid printing using handouts that have 100 mentions of the name of God. You know, we take the parak that we intend to teach, and we go through and we delete dafka, the name of God.
That's exactly right, right. And the new Bar Ilan response, you know, and all the, I think in the early versions of Bar Ilan, in the biblical psukim, it still had yud hey vav hey. Now it's all been replaced by yud kuf vav kuf. Because of this concern, right? Because of this concern of we don't want to, on the production end, we don't want to create that kind of situation. All right, so that's at least a first sketch on that.
Sponsor Radio is a project of the Center for Jewish Law and Values at Mechon Hadar and is produced by Jewish Public Media, which creates, curates, and promotes excellent Jewish content and is funded in part by Next and Natan. If you have a halachic question you'd like answered on the show, email us at halacha@mechonhadar.org. You can also leave us a voicemail at 215-297-4254.